Welcome to Grad Chat, your opportunity to find out about graduate research here at Queen's. My name is KM on the FM, and I'm your host for this week's Grad Chat. A show like this could not happen without the support of the School of Graduate Studies and Postdoctoral Affairs and CFRC. So a big thank you to both of them. If you missed the show at any time, you can download the podcast the next day on either iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or CFRC Podcast. It is a great way to stay informed about all the exciting research our graduate students and postdocs are working on. So today, I would like to introduce you to Emily Croft, who is working on a PhD in art history under the supervisions of Dr. Kathleen Henninger and Christiana Zaccanino. Welcome to GradChat, Emily.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on the show. And before we dive into your research today, can you tell us a little bit about your journey up until this point? So what brought you to Queen's for art history?
Well, I actually started at Queen's in 2016, and I did my undergrad here in classics. It used to be called classical studies, now it's classics and archaeology, and then I did a master's in that as well, and at Queen's. And I took a year off after my master's and pondered, you know, what was the next best step for me, and ended up deciding on joining the art history department to do a PhD because I wanted to focus more on what happens to archaeological objects after they've come out of the ground rather than the process of finding them. And so the art history department is extremely multidisciplinary, and they give you the opportunity to study museums, museology, heritage preservation, and that's where I ended up.
Oh, very nice. So you've been at Queen's for a while, but you've taken a few different paths and tried a few different programs.
Yeah.
And you started to tell us a little bit about it, but can you tell us about your current PhD project?
Yes, absolutely. So first, I have to say thank you very much to SHRC for giving me funding for the next 3 years. I'm extremely grateful for that opportunity. But my funding is covering my research on the development of archaeological museums in Sardinia, Italy, from 1861 until 1939. So those 2 dates are defined by 1861 is when Italy becomes a country. So beforehand, it's just a bunch of these different little regions. And then there's this big movement that's led out of the north to make Italy one nation. And then the 1939 is defined by a piece of legislation that was signed in under the fascist government, which was really the last big piece of legislation dealing with cultural heritage until like 1999. And so what I'll be doing is looking at how objects are being uncovered, the reasons for them being uncovered, and then why they're ending up in a museum. I would like to look at it through a cultural political lens, because as I've been learning throughout my research is that objects are being excavated and ending up in museums, not for purely historical purposes, but their excavation and display can be very tied to what is happening from a top-down narrative. And so what is the government trying to do, and what story do they want to tell? And so in terms of Sardinia, I'll be looking at it through both the movement for nationalism and then also the fascist movement, which most people know, some might not, that that was very tied to classical antiquities, to what was coming out of ancient Rome. I'm also really interested in finding out who are the main actors in this process, so archaeologists, politicians, and then looking at where the objects are coming from. Are they coming from digs? Are they coming from being falsely manufactured? That is seemingly where it's heading right now.
Oh, very interesting. It seems very timely as well to be thinking about how cultural institutions and can be co-opted or utilized by governments to advance certain agendas or certain narratives.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's unfortunately becoming extremely relative, as I had maybe naively assumed that museums were truth tellers. And I think it's really leading towards an advance of that might not be the case. So
So we'll I think your topic is very topical, although it is in maybe a region that people are less familiar with. Can you tell us a little bit about Sardinia in general? I'm not sure where the region is myself.
Absolutely, yeah. And so Sardinia, if we think of Italy as the boot, as we normally do, if you go west of about 200 kilometers, there's an island, and that is the island of Sardinia. And so it's about 200 kilometers from Italy. It's about 200 kilometers from North Africa. And it is this now a semi-autonomous region of Italy since 1947. but it is still a part of that country. Because of its geographical positioning, it's actually created this really fantastic sort of blended culture that comes out a lot in the archaeology. But the people have a really unique sense of pride, of regional pride, which is what led me, partly what led me to doing my research there.
Oh, very cool. And when you're looking at an archaeological museum, I'm curious to know how that differs from, say, another type of museum, maybe like the Museum of Healthcare or the Agnes Etherington Gallery on campus. What differs in an archaeological museum from maybe those types of sites?
Yeah, so I think part of it is their genesis. So a lot of these museums are being formed from antiquarian collections. And so these are people who in the late 1700s, 1800s are very fascinated with the relics of our past, and they put them into their own private collections before donating them to usually a royal institution like university. And then universities decide, we want this to be a singular collection. And so one of the museums that I look at is now the Archaeological Museum of the University of Cagliari, or it was associated with the University of Cagliari, and it's in Sardinia, and that's how it started. And now it totally encompasses just archaeological artifacts. And I think this differs versus something like the Museum of Healthcare, like you mentioned, in the fact that it's what the collections are focusing on.
Okay, yeah.
Because we have in Ottawa, we've got our Museum of History, and it does include archaeological artifacts, but that's not its focus. And so I think that is kind of the two differentiating factors.
Oh, that makes sense. No, it's so about the creation of the collection, the age of the collection, the type of collection, those types of things. Yes. So are there lots of museums in your study for your PhD, or are there a certain amount of sites? Like, did you have to set parameters to keep it to a reasonable sized study?
So Sardinia is relatively small geographically, and so having that geographical limit helpful. The other limiter was the time frame. Looking at it from between 1861 to 1939, that's narrowed me down to about five institutions, two of which are in the major centers of the island. So Cagliari in the south and Sassari in the north. And then I think there's three other smaller institutions that were either founded in the late 1800s or just before the increase of fascism. And so that was, luckily I had those limits, because Italy with its, you know, it, very extensive material past. There are archaeological museums all throughout the country that are, you know, have been founded from the country's inception, even beforehand, and still are being, you know, founded. And so it was very helpful to have those two kind of parameters.
Yes, I can only imagine how you have to finish your PhD sometime, right? So I'm glad that you have a kind of a natural fit that within the region that just delineates what sites you'll study. So within these, so you've got these five cultural sites and heritage sites, but what role did these archaeological museums in Sardinia or in Italy generally play in shaping an understanding of the ancient past? You've touched on this a little bit, but I'd like to dig into it more.
Right. So I can tell you a lot about the rest of Italy, but that's where my research comes in, which is it's not coming about in terms of Sardinia. And that was my, you know, that ever faithful gap that PhD students are looking for. So Italy, as I had mentioned, is a conglomeration of a bunch of distinct regions that had their own languages, dialects, food styles, clothing, you know, very different places, that in the 1800s, it was decided that they would become one nation. But there was a lot of pushback because of how distinct all of these geographic places were. And so it was decided that archaeology was going to be used as one of these ways of justifying why these nations should now come together as one country.
Oh, okay.
And so what ended up happening is they would do digs and they would find, you know, ancient artifacts and say, oh, they are all belonging to one culture that's come from the north and has civilized down into the south, which mirrored the unification process of the country. And then these objects, as they're being put into museums, that's the story that they're telling, is that it's giving them that historical justification for why the people should accept being now in one country.
So creating, well, I guess this is up to interpretation, but either creating or sharing a shared ancient past between all of these different previously autonomous regions throughout Italy.
So when we get into the fascist period, the focus then starts to lay on classical objects. And so objects coming from the ancient Romans, as opposed to societies that existed before them. And museums are also promoting those objects. And there's all of these exhibitions that are taking place, both to put on focus these objects that are being found in Italy, but also objects that are coming from Northern Africa, which Italy had colonized at that time, to justify why Italy should be, you know, the holders of these African nations.
So it sounds like a little bit of hearkening back to the idea of like a golden past or a golden age of past empires or regions, and that the new Italian governments, newly formed Italian governments, were using this as justification to continue those holdings.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was a justification for Mediterranean hegemony.
Okay. Yeah. No, that makes, it makes sense. And what a role to play, right? If museums are telling these really powerful stories that connect people, and depending on who's writing those stories, right, or interpreting those, it can be used in many different ways, as you've explained to us. You touched on this a little bit, that you've chosen Sardinia because it hasn't been explored in the same way that other parts of Italy have been in relation to archaeological museums. And you mentioned again, like, that it's geographically unique, as it's kind of a little more isolated as it's an island. But are there any other things that make Sardinia unique that you are excited to look for as you start or continue your studies?
Ooh, that's a great question. I think it's just understanding, I guess perhaps it's to say the truth behind it, because starting in the 1960s is when it became a very prominent idea of Sardinian separatism. And that a lot of archaeology and archaeological collections then start promoting this unique identity compared to Italy. And it's really taken over museum collections. And I'm interested to know as to when that starts, and to kind of compare what's happening in Sardinia to what's happening on the mainland, to see, is this really the case? Is there any justification for this movement? There is a whole cultural political reasoning as to why Sardinians feel this way, in that they themselves feel very distinct. A lot of people I know, you know, they're Sardinians first, Italian second maybe, and they feel that they have been treated very poorly in the grand scheme of the Italians, and they are disadvantaged when it comes to access to resources, education, ability. And so I would like to see if I can blend how people are feeling with what I interpret to be my own, you know, academic truth.
It sounds like you're looking for long trends and trajectories of narratives shifting over time, and seeing how they map or don't map onto political and cultural movements at the same time. Would that be fair to say?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. No, that sounds very interesting, because I think, like we mentioned, there's a lot of contemporary movements of reshaping identities at regional, national, global levels. So I think that even though you might be looking into the 19th or 20th century, I think you're going to see a lot of echoes into the 21st century as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
This all sounds very interesting, and it's been so far more high level, but I'm very curious about how you approach this research. Like, what are some research methods that you use to study these? Like, what does a research day look like for you when you're studying Sardinia?
A lot of what I've been doing is just desperately trying to access books, because it's not very well published about in English. It means a lot of our libraries here in Canada don't have those books. So our fantastic library team has been interlibrary loaning things for me. A lot of it right now is because I am in the early stages of doing that primary research, is combing through footnotes, looking for references to museum collections and archival material. That's been the last few weeks. And I'm actually preparing to leave tomorrow to go to Italy.
Oh, amazing.
to do some archival research. So actually access these documents myself.
So with the archives, what types of archives are you going to be going into? Are these state, national? Are they the museums themselves? Can you tell us a little bit more about what those are going to be like?
Yeah. So right now the plan is for the next 2 months, I'm going to be in Sardinia, and I will start with going to the central archives of the state, which they have different locations throughout Italy. Mm-hmm. I'm going to start with the one in Cagliari, which is the capital city. I will also go to the historic archive, the city itself, and then the archive of the superintendency, which is the governmental heritage agency that overlooks all cultural heritage within Italy. So that's where I'll start, and then going to the museums themselves. And then if I have time and or the need, I will access the same institutions up in Sassari, which is about 3 hours to the north, and visit their museum there, as well as the other three that I've identified.
Oh, very interesting. It sounds like it's going to be hopefully a very fruitful trip. Lots of records, I hope. Do Sardinian officials or Italian officials keep strong records of cultural heritage, or is it a little more ad hoc in the type of records they've kept over the years?
Oh, no, they everything has been kept. As far as I've found, it's just dependent on what has been digitized and what has ended up in Sardinia, which is a lot of letters between archaeologists and government officials versus what's being held in Rome, which I think is my next step in the new year, is to then go to Rome and access the giant archive of the state. Mm-hmm. And that's where most of the information is kept on how these museums are fitting into legislation and those different aspects.
Well, it's going to be very interesting, because I think you're going to have, it sounds like you'll have a lot of different narratives to follow and see how they all, you know, end up being expressed in museums, because you're going to have stories from archaeologists who, you know, maybe have, I don't think neutral is the right word, because I don't think a lot of stuff can be neutral, but maybe altruistic or just excitement about, you know, an excavation of a site and objects, and then, you know, more bureaucratic officials who have a certain idea of what should be found or what should be presented, and seeing those kind of competing ideas and what ends up, you know, being put forward to the public. I think that sounds like it's going to be very fun for you to trace all of those different stories.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's something I am lucky to actively excavate in Sardinia. And I like to think that I am just doing it because I'm so fascinated with what's coming out of the ground. But then, yes, I'd like to backtrack and say, you know, historically, is that what's going on? Or is there this greater message that's looking at them, that they're, you know, I have to find something that's justifying Sardinia's connection to this larger plot of nationalism, or yeah.
And I guess, sorry, I enjoy records. So I'm curious about what languages are you going to encounter, or dialects, and how do you work with these different records that, you know, might speak to one another, or there might be things lost in translation, but between both, you know, regional speakers and mainland speakers and those things. But how do you work with all these different languages you might encounter?
Yeah, so the one that I'll primarily be working in is Italian, which I am very lucky that I have been able to pick up over the last 3 years of working in and out of Sardinia. And I took some classes at Queen's. Mm. So I'm fairly proficient, I'd like to say. It's just when we start getting into older versions of languages, that's where it becomes a little bit fuzzy. And so I think it's just going to be a lot of patience looking at the archival records and seeing, you know, how does this word, it looks similar, is it what I'm actually looking for? Also in Sardinia, I mean, every place in Italy has its own dialect. Sardinia also has its own language. It's called Sardo. It's mostly now a spoken language. There is a resurgence in teaching it to the younger generation, but it's not written in, I guess I should say. But one of the early directors of the museum in Cagliari, he was actually a priest and a linguist. So he is coevally doing a lot of studies on the objects, but also the formation of the language. And so I'm very interested to see if, you know, the two pop up in conjunction. Unfortunately, I only know a few phrases in Sardinian, and so I might need some help, but we'll see where I can get that from. Because most young people don't necessarily speak it. But there are dictionaries that exist, so we'll see what I can do.
That'll be very interesting, because I wonder too, you know, in official records, if there's been a push for like a federalization of the state, will Sardo be included in those records or not, right? Or will it be all in Italian?
Right.
Which, with the unification.
Even Italian as a language itself is sort of constructed, because it was decided to base it off of the accent and dialect that was coming from Florence. That was decided what Italian was going to be. And so, you know, there's probably a push that that would be the language used for all official commentary. And so, it will be interesting to see if there is a resurgence on a broader level at some point of the Sardinian language.
Oh, very cool. And I'd like to just ask, like, what impact are you hoping your research to have? Because this project sounds like it would be of interest to a lot of folks, both in the region, but also for the kind of broader implications, right, about how narratives about identity are constructed. So what impact are you hoping to have?
Absolutely. So on the easiest answer level is that I would just really like to see something in English written about the history of Sardinia, because it has become an island that's very dear to me, and sharing the love that I have for the island and the people and the history, making that more broadly accessible, like kind of transnationally, that is a huge goal that I have. But you're right, on a more current level is this issue that we're seeing where the government can dictate what stories are being told. And that is part of what I would like to do with my research, is have it be perhaps written in a more accessible way that can warn people as to the dangers of what can happen when we aren't using history as a truth, that we have to be extremely aware of the fact that what we're seeing from the past might not necessarily be a fact. Because that was really, I was so naive when I started. And now I just have such a huge appreciation for the critical thinking skills that I've learned throughout my whole university career, that I can now think, what is the purpose of what's being presented? And how should I, you know, how should I interpret it through my own, you know, my own background and what I've learned? And I'm very privileged that I go to university, but I come from a community where not a lot of people do. And so I would really like to have some sort of outcome where on a smaller scale, I can, you know, maybe impart some of these warnings, I guess. That sounds a bit bleak, but it's become very relevant lately.
No, I think we could all use a refresher on the importance of critical thinking and critical interpretations of narratives and storytelling. Yeah. And then what a powerful tool storytelling is, but to understand that it is, can be used in many different ways, as most tools can be. Yeah. and I wanted to ask as well, because you've mentioned some objects and some and records, but what is the most memorable object you've encountered in your research so far? Do you have any favorites?
Yeah, as of right now, I've been doing a lot of looking into, they're called the false idols. So they were these bronze idols. So these little statues that are often of animals or people that are very particular to the Sardinian Bronze Age culture called the Nuragic civilization. And they do find them very frequently, but in the mid-1800s, all of a sudden, there are these very important telling idols of particular goddesses. And they start circulating throughout European universities and museums. But it turns out that they're actually fake, that they were made in somebody's workshop in Cagliari, Sardinia, to kind of fuel this desire to find objects from this particular civilization. And so those are my favorite ones right now.
Oh, those are very interesting. So now they're historic in one sense, but they are not ancient in the way that they were presented.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so I'm excited to hopefully get my hands on some of them when I go to Italy next week, but we'll see.
Oh, I hope you get to encounter the false idols. And what a great name too, for some of very on the nose for some of the things you're studying, some of the big themes. So as you mentioned, you're headed to Italy, and by the time this episode airs, you will be well on your way in your research. But can you tell us a little bit about your plans? I know you've touched on this a little bit. You'll be going there for about 2 months, but outside of archives, what else will you be doing? Anything fun on top of all the research that you're doing?
So I'm actually starting my trip by going to Naples, which I've never seen before, and I'm going to visit Pompeii.
Oh, very cool.
Which I'm just absolutely chuffed about because I've never been there and I've done a lot of research on it through my master's. So that's step one. And then it will be a lot of archival research, but hopefully some traveling around Sardinia as well, because I'm quite lucky. I have a lot of friends there now who are from different parts of the island. And I would love to be able to see where they're from, because usually I only see them in the summers when we're doing archaeology together. So yeah, so step one is doing the archives, and then I'll be back in Canada. And then at some point in the spring, I will go to the UK, because there are some Sardinian objects that have made their way to the British Museum, the Ashmolean Museum. And then I'll be doing archival work there as well, because there are some items of correspondence that I'd like to see. And, you know, it's jolly old England who doesn't want to, you know, explore there. And then I will be back into Italy late spring next year, I think, but into Rome to go into that state archives that I mentioned. And then hopefully by the midsummer, I will be back excavating at the site that I work at that's called Nora. And it's right on the southern coast of Sardinia. And it's a fantastic site. And actually, as I'm excavating, we're finding traces of people who were excavating there in the 1800s.
Oh, very interesting.
Yeah. So that was one of the things that had led me to this project, was 2 summers ago, we found traces of people digging trenches, looking for tombs at that point. But, you know, that I think feeds very well into what I study of, you know, archaeology again. And like the museums isn't just about, you know, science fact. It's about, you know, sometimes you're kind of light treasure hunting.
Well, that's so great that you have the experience, the archaeological experience, to support your understanding of this project as well. So it seems like you're going to have a very holistic approach that maybe not everyone else would have without all this great archaeological experience you have from your master's and your undergrad. So this is more just as something I'm curious about, but as someone who's spent many summers in Italy and clearly has a lot of experience there, and in Sardinia, what are some great sites people should visit in your opinion?
Well, first I'm going to start with being biased and that everybody should go to Sardinia because it is very well visited by Europeans, but not so much by North Americans. And if you're there, obviously Cagliari, and there's a lot of really neat sites right along the south coast that are great tourist locations. But there's also the site that I work at that's a tourist site, which is fun to visit. Outside of Sardinia, and very much not aligned with my research, is Florence. I am absolutely obsessed with Florence. They have the Uffizi Gallery, which is, you know, it's got every lick of important artwork that you could hope to see. And there's also all these beautiful towns around the outside as well that are easy to get to. Yeah, those are my two big ones, really.
Okay.
I am a big, big fan of Sardinia and Florence.
I think those sound like wonderful places to visit. And now we have some excellent recommendations as well to check out the archaeological side and maybe some more art history that doesn't come up in people's first imaginings of Italy trips when it comes to food and sites to see.
Even I was quite lucky to do some work with another professor at Queen's, Dr. Una Delia, who's doing these databases of Renaissance sculptures across Italy. And I've been working with her on the Sardinian one. And Sardinia actually has a really unique tradition of Renaissance art, which is just quite influenced by the Spanish. And so there is a national portrait gallery in Cagliari that has these beautiful Renaissance works that are all toned and golden. And, you know, I think it's an interesting place for accessing all kinds of art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like whatever era you're a fan of, you can find some of it to enjoy in Sardinia or in wider Italy as well.
Absolutely. And come back in a month and I'll tell you how Pompeii was.
Well, thank you, Emily, so much for telling us all about your research. It's been great chatting with you. Best of luck on your research trip. And yes, hopefully you'll have to come back on Grad Chat in the future and tell us about what you've found so far.
I would love to. Thank you so much for having me.
So that's it, everyone. Another week of Grad Chat comes to an end. Don't forget, you can download the show tomorrow from either iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or CFRC Podcast. Just search Grad Chat. And until next week, this is KM on the FM.
Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University, situated on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of the Faculty of Engineering and Applied Science.